Hi everyone, welcome. I just wanted to say, as you all know, this is a podcast and we record it. As always, it's the first thing we try to say at the beginning all the time is that it's being recorded so that if anyone is calling in for the first time, they know that. If you want to talk, you may want to use a pseudonym. Some of us do that, some of us don't. It's personal preference. The other thing is, it's not that like that many people listen, but some people do and they really appreciate it. The other thing that we try to mention is that this is essentially like a support or a book discussion group. If you have medical concerns, you always want to see a medical doctor. And I'm going to pause for a second and then Herbie will start the show. He is our facilitator today. Congratulations, Herbie.
Thank you.
Go.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Eric Herbert Watson, or Herbie. And I'll be host tonight. We'll be talking about Alan Gordon's TMS recovery program, Tending to Ourselves. This is August the 6th, 2013. We'll be going over sections 3.9, 3.10, 3.11, and 3.12, which will be a wonderful discussion on how to soothe ourselves and how to get ourselves back to that calm feeling that helps us heal. Bruce will go ahead and give us the intro, but before he does, I'd like to thank Joy for being here tonight, and Walt, thank you for being here. Nina, thank you for being here. Bruce, MC, always, God bless you, always good to see you guys here, and enjoy. And Forrest, thank you for being here, Forrest. And there's another Nana that's here. So thank you guys for being here. Bruce, you want to take over?
Okay. This is Bruce MC, and I'm going to give an overview of the last four sections of the TMS recovery program that was contributed to the TMS forum by Alan Gordon, who's adjunct lecturer at USC and director of the Pain Psychology Center in Beverly Hills, California. Hence all his references to the Lakers. this Pain Psychology Center uses understanding plus examples from actual practice using cognitive behavioral therapy, psychodynamic therapy, and perhaps most importantly, ISTDP, intensive short-term dynamic psychotherapy, of which there are several examples in the audio portions of the recovery program that we're going to be covering tonight. And last but not least, he uses mindfulness training as part of the recovery process. I might begin my overview with a recap of the conclusion at the end of the recovery program, because it ties together several of the sections that we're going to cover, from standing up to your inner bully through taking a loving stance. And Alan says that the goal of this recovery program is to help you identify some of the areas that you might need to address psychologically and provide you with some tools to that end. And he says the development of self-compassion, self-love, an internal protector, the ability to self-soothe, and the capacity to tend to your emotions is an ongoing process. Be patient with yourself in this venture. Your symptoms have the potential to scare you, knock you down, render you hopeless. Stay the course, though. You can beat this thing. I have, too, because I gather Alan had TMS symptoms at some point. So the sections that we're going to cover, as Herbie said already, is providing comfort to yourself, prioritizing yourself, attending to your internal state, and taking a loving stance. And these all ripple out of, I think, standing up to your inner bully. So you might entitle this section, give it a subheading of the uses of anger, I thought. First is stand up to your inner, first is provide comfort. And the example therein from a session with Alan is by Mandy. And 310, prioritizing yourself, is has a example, an audio example of a session with John. And attending to your internal state is another section with John. It's illustrates by example, which is one thing that Alan thinks is really important, that these examples illustrate the theory. So you get a handle on this from listening to this and reading it at the same time. And then taking a loving stance has an audio portion of a dialogue that Alan had with a young lady named Lainey. But Mandy, John, and Lainey all have certain things in common in terms of the generation of their symptomology, their TMS symptomology. I think with John, it's primarily anxiety. With Lainey, it's IBS, fatigue, and insomnia. And I'm not sure what it is with Mandy, Forrest. Has she got back problems? But one thing they all have in common is that each of these clients, patients, were treating themselves the way they were treated by their parents as a child, all of them to the last person. And also they're all self-conscious of others ahead of themselves. And that's what Alan talks about quite a bit, about prioritizing yourself. And they place their own needs at the end of the line, and they, in the process, they neglect themselves, and they pay a price in anger, which manifests as symptoms, anger and anxiety. In John's case, I think the anxiety masks anger, which comes out in the second session, where Alan focuses in, says, what is it about this hate? I hate myself for having to be so good to please my mother all the time, who neglected me. Mm-hmm. And thus it goes. It ripples through generations that way. In providing comfort, Alan says that many of us were never truly soothed growing up or confronted when we were scared. And the example that he cites in the audio that you get to listen in on is Mandy soothing her daughter, who's afraid of a lightning storm. But this is to make up for the fact that Mandy, was never soothed herself by her mother when she was growing up in what she felt to be an unsafe environment. And it's kind of ironic in here, ambivalent anyway. The question that Alan is often asked about is, how do you know when to respond to the fear with anger and when to respond with comfort? It's a funny question. You don't have to make that choice if you're in touch with your feelings, because when you see a child getting pushed around by an older kid, you don't have to ask, should I comfort him or should I stand up to the bully? You just know because you feel it. And that the implication, I guess, is that these patients are out of touch with their authentic feelings, their authentic self, because of this failure to prioritize themselves. There's a example attached to providing comfort, the section with Mandy. and it's a printout in Adobe. It's To Fear or Not to Fear. And Alan's conclusion is that in most cases, 99% of the time, you will be okay. There is no external threat, except in 1% of the cases. And 3.10 is, again, falls out, ripples out of this, is to prioritize yourself. And the example he has is of John, whose mom and sister came first, not John. So he is the one who's harboring this great anger, and having to be perfect all the time, too. He eventually breaks down in ISTP-DP therapy and admits it. And that's where Alan focuses in, gets to the crux where the past and the present intersect. The trauma of the past and the emotional present intersect. And the final section is attending to your internal state. Let's see, I've got a lot of notes here. This is the second section with John, actually. He has no father. His mother's been married 5 times. She's an alcoholic. She basically pays no attention to him. And he's spent his entire life trying to get her attention by being perfect and good, doing everything the right way. And he's in the process, he's not attended to his internal state. He's out of touch with his feelings. And the last section, I believe, is, here it is, was taking a loving stance. And this is illustrated with Alan's session with Lainey, who has always been accomplished and beautiful in order to be a kind of a showpiece for her, a showcase for her mother, rather than herself. She's always been living up to her mother's expectations. Again, here's somebody else who's living out a childhood drama all their life. So she's got to get compliments in the restaurant where she works, which is a very très chic place, very hip in LA. She's got to get a master's degree because this is an accomplishment that will reflect positively on her mother. So does anyone want to dive into this? There's certainly enough material here. I think one of these audios would be enough for us to chat all day.
I really like the way that in the first section, prioritize yourself. And of course, I think we're all kind of socialized not to prioritize ourselves. But he's very specific. He says, are you more important, or is this particular circumstance more important? And the example that he uses, oftentimes you could say, well, no, I'm more important. Shall I put myself first, or shall I put the fact that some little thing is happening that is making me feel bad? Which one goes first? Which is more important? Are my feelings more important, or is this small event in the outer world more important? And it makes it very much easier in my mind to say, well, no, of course I should put myself first in this situation. It isn't going to hurt whatever it is to go second. And if I put it first, I'm going to feel bad. So I thought that was a really good insight that Alan offered in that section on prioritizing yourself.
Yeah, it's Walt. I think he was right on.
Yeah, you should do your homework, but you should remain calm while you're doing your homework. You shouldn't be totally irresponsible. This isn't a license to libertinism and self-indulgence. It's just the manner in which you do these things.
But a lot of times people put everybody and everything ahead of themselves. And sometimes that's logically totally unnecessary. You don't even have to think about it. You know, if you're going to feel bad if you put something that isn't important ahead of yourself, then why do it? Why not say, no, it's important how I feel, so I'm going to attend to my own needs and let this this little incident, whatever it is. Now, I mean, obviously, if you have a child or somebody's in dire straits, then you put them first, you know. But there are times when there's no need to do that. You can just simply choose yourself. I think that's great. I've never thought of that before.
You might have some neurotic baggage that you're carrying over from your childhood that causes you to do this.
Well, I certainly do.
Yourself. don't we all, though?
Yeah, exactly. Plenty.
Yeah,
so I just thought I thought he made a very, very good point. I was really impressed by that. And the way when he talked to John in the clip in this section was great, because John was not giving himself a fair due consideration. He was, so just changing that was wonderful.
Did you listen to the way John's level of anxiety intensified and the way his voice would change as he got closer and closer to the center of the drama? You could really tell he was putting himself under pressure. You could see how he got, and also the tone of voice got more like the tone of voice he would be using when talking to his indifferent mother, his narcissistic mother, pleading for attention.
He was working himself up, and Alan pointed out to him that he was doing it. There was no good reason to do it. He had somewhere along the line learned to do that, and it was time to reassess that behavior. That was another thing. It was a great point. Yeah, I found that very helpful.
Well, what
I thought
these
last four sections were just great, actually.
Okay.
What did you like? I'm dying to hear. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay.
Here I am jumping in. I can't break out of the facilitator thing, but
I just let my dog out to tinkle me. Now I'm back.
I see. Go
ahead.
I can't resist. When Bruce just asked, said that he loved it, what did you love the most about that? I love hearing what people like the most. You said you really liked these sections.
I liked the audios and the way they reinforced the points that he was making in the text. It made it very vivid. In fact, it overshadowed the words. If you just focused on these three audio clips, you could get everything out of it that he was saying. You could gloss over what he was saying, and you could find it right there in the audio. It was very vivid, very humanistic.
Very interesting.
That's why
Thank
it was just
you.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Forrest, did you want to say something?
Why don't you take back over? I'm sorry.
I was wondering what Walt had to say.
Oh, well, I'd be glad to throw something out here. I can relate to the part that the guy had his mother married five times, because I know everybody has four fathers, but I had four fathers. And it was a little difficult to handle all that. I loved my birth father, and then he was a heavy drinker and a gambler, and mom divorced him when I was about six, and she went to a tavern and met a mailman who had a house, and she decided he wanted to marry her, so they married. We had a house over our head for a year, my brother and sister and I. I was the youngest, and my brother is the oldest, and then my sister in the middle one. Anyway, we had him as a stepfather for a year, and Mom got back with my father and stayed with him for another 10 years, and we were glad of that until he died, and then she married his brother, who was a psychopath. terrible time with him. So it was not an easy growing up, you know, with all of that. And my brother I loved, but he kept bullying me. He kept using me as a punching bag. He used to throw me on the couch and stomp on my stomach with his feet. Years later, we played golf together, and we had a good time. But, boy, growing up, it was rough. And I think now I can understand why he was rough on me. He resented, you know, looking after, my mother had him look after my sister and me. So he felt cheated. You know, he wanted to be out with his pals. So he took his frustrations out on me. Now I understand it, and I can forgive him for that. But at the time, I didn't know why. I also wondered why my father kept belittling me, putting me down in front of his pals, his grown-up pals, his drinking buddies. And I still don't understand why he did that. But fortunately, you know, he and I got to know and understand each other, and I think we put behind us a lot of that stuff. So anyway, that was comforting. I grew up being afraid of the boogeyman. I thought he was going to come in from the alley and slit my throat. So I would have nightmares about that, but I never told anybody about it. I internalized all those nightmares and the bad, you know, fear. So I'm sure that didn't help me with my self-esteem. And then I tried to be the perfect boy, you know, like the other one was saying, for his mother, you know, be perfect so that, you know, I didn't cause any further troubles. Over the years, I think people got, I became well-liked because I liked people. I let them have the feeling that I liked them. So in return, I got friendly feelings from them. And I remember one case, there was an elderly lady, she must have been in her 80s, in our neighborhood in Evanston when I was adult and, totally grown up, living on my own. I used to see her walking in the neighborhood, and nobody paid any attention to her, and I thought, what a shame. So I used to stop and talk to her, and I found out she was had a fascinating background. She grew up in Vienna, and her father had been the barber to Kaiser Wilhelm of Austria, the emperor. He died in 1941. But she knew him. She grew up with her father, telling her stories, you know, about the emperor. And this lady had wound up, I don't know the story of how it happened, but she was in public housing in our neighborhood. And she told me, she says, you know, here I was, you know, my father was the barber to the Kaiser, and I wind up being in public housing. And she had one room in an apartment building that was provided by the city of Evanston. And she said, it's always cold in the winter. And she said, I would sit there in my one little room freezing cold and couldn't get anybody to, get the heat up. So when I heard that, shortly after that, I went to a garage sale and I saw a feather bed quilt. And I bought it for $5. And I brought it over and gave it to her. And she said, oh, now I can sit at the window and look out, you know, and be warm. So I thought, well, doing that kindness to others gives us a good feeling, helps mm-hmm. our self-acceptance. And
that took a lot of stress. That took a lot off from you, looking at that lady and seeing her, and she needed that help, and you wouldn't done. Was that not self-soothing and just
it really
a great
was.
Feeling?
I felt good about it. I felt good about it. If you do something for somebody else, it comes back a thousandfold.
Yeah, he was providing comfort.
Yeah, and warmth and comfort, and I think part of it was just listening to her. You know, nobody. She was totally alone. Nobody would listen to her, and I think she appreciated that. And
that's great. Well,
you know, it made me feel good. And
I'm
I think
interested.
We can all look back on little things that we did of kindness that help us.
Yes, I'm interested. You know, in the step 3.9, how some of us peers here have provided comfort to ourselves. Help ourselves, you know, self-soothe,
right.
Or
like
for myself. Like for myself, I learned through awareness, through the law of attraction, through watching my reactions. You know, through watching my focus, through having to change that fear attitude I had. I had a lot of different things I had to face and change to be able to provide my self-comfort, or the inner child, as Alan Gordon states a lot, that we have in there, or the id part of us that needs that soothing.
I'll jump in there, Herbie.
Okay.
My experience, I'd use two things. So you had asked, how do we soothe ourselves? How do we provide comfort? I think there's two things that I do. One thing is I just remind myself that it's okay. And that feels kind of similar to what Alan is talking about in his to fear or not to fear, exercise. I just say, you know, whatever it is, it's okay. Cause often I tend to be fairly self-critical, and I beat myself up occasionally. And so I just say, you know, whatever it is, it's going to be okay. This is not a crisis. It's fine.
I think that's excellent. That's a really, really helpful thing.
Yeah.
You know, when we fall down as kids and we scratch our knee or something, or we're worried or something about it, my mother always said, it's okay. It'll be okay. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay.
Mm.
And she also used to say, it'll all come out in the wash.
Mm-hmm.
When you clean, you know, a stained blouse or shirt or whatever, the problem comes out in the wash.
Mm.
And I noticed when I got older, I didn't think that I needed any of that. Probably 5 years or 20 years of my life, I didn't think I needed any of that for myself. I wanted to give it and pour it to everybody else all I could, but at the same time, I would come home and beat myself up, and I don't know why I was doing that other than I'm still trying to figure out why I was doing all that, the inner bully, as we've talked about before. But anyway, tonight is providing comfort. And on one section, Forrest told his, Bruce, or Nina, y'all wanna step in and tell how y'all might provide comfort before we go to the next section?
Providing comfort for yourself?
Yes, for yourself. I think it would be good for us peers to say what we do for ourselves.
Well, again, Alan, he explains it very well when he says, if there were a baby crying in the next room, you would go in and do something about the baby. And you wouldn't go in and yell at the kid. You wouldn't try and excite it. You would calm it. You would soothe it. So if you do that when you feel yourself becoming more and more anxious, just go in and look after that baby. That's you, you know. You're going to, instead of working yourself up more and more, you're going to calm yourself down more and more and get the situation under control. So it's again a very simple logical point, but we don't always think about that. You know, I have a tendency to get, if I say, for example, if I'm upset at my poor husband, and I tend to work myself up. Now, I don't have to do that. I'm making a choice there, and it wasn't a rational choice, and I wasn't thinking through the time. But Alan gave me a really great tool for saying, okay, I'm starting to get worked up. I'm just going to calm down. I'm gonna soothe that inner baby.
That's good. That's really good.
I noticed last week that I was having a dialogue with my inner bully, who was assuming different personas and was telling me I was no good. And I went over to somebody's house, and when I left, I didn't feel that way. It isn't so much an intellectual process as it is learning how to operate on the states of mind inside you and activate them. Because when I drove north, driving back to my house, all of a sudden I was just being nice to myself, and the voices melted away. They weren't there anymore. Awesome. And I all the way back home that afternoon, it was like, well, what's the point of all that?
Yeah.
I mean, just be good to yourself, and there's no need to engage in these counterproductive, self-destructive dialogues with an adversary. What's the point?
Exactly.
I think also it's doing mindfulness meditation every day. You learn how to manipulate or move those states of mind, activate them, and you get a perspective on it with distance, so that you can see just how stupid it is to engage in these kind of self-destructive dialogues. So what am I doing this for? There's no need. It's a nice day. And I noticed the voice started to creep back, and then I just turned it off. And I said, hey, there's no need to let it rise up. And then I noticed that afternoon when I got in the house and I started getting a bit cranky about having some work to do, then it started coming back. And I said, stop. But you can see how it works. It's very much setting. Certain environments are charged with psychological valences and meanings to you, private meanings that you may not even be aware of, that are unconscious. I don't know, Freud would have a field day. The psychopathology of everyday life? What does the fork mean to your unconscious? What does this TV set mean? What does this turn on a road mean?
But I like the way that you tied it back to our experiences, because I think we can recognize these things on an intellectual level, but it really does come down to exactly what you illustrated. I loved your example of, you know, fixing the thought in the moment. I think that's great.
Well, it's developing a mental facility that lets you do that. It's a faculty. It's something you can learn. And I think that's at the heart of TMS healing, because the next day I went out and took a bicycle ride. My left leg that had sciatica was stronger than it had ever been. And I went twice as fast on the bicycle. Just all of a sudden, it was gone. And that gives you a real understanding that it is not physical. That reinforces that point. And the only way it gets reinforced, that knowledge, is with experience. You have to have that experience of feeling the strength come back and saying, boy, there's nothing wrong with me physically. It was all a mind game.
That's awesome.
If you can learn that facility, if you can learn that skill, that psychological skill to heal yourself, it's more like a good feeling. Being able to turn it on and off. Well, turn it on and keep it on. Because it lets you deal with things in the present without this inherited neurosis from your childhood. You have to be done with that. At some point, you just have to say, I think Enjoy said, well, why don't you just forget about your mother and father? I said, yeah, why not? What's the problem? You can't.
It's kind of hard to do that. You know, I thought it was interesting when the part where Alan was telling, you know, he was asking Mandy, what would you give to yourself as a little girl and were scared? And Mandy told him, you know, well, I'd sit her on my lap and rock her and tell her everything's going to be okay and that she, you know, and she would be safe. And when I heard that part, It reminded me of me when I was at SIDD, and I did the timeline on myself where I closed my eyes and saw myself as a little girl and was upset, and me as an adult went over there to talk to me as a child. And what I did was I explained to her, that everything, I started soothing her, and I started telling her that everything was going to be okay. But I visualized, seeing myself as a little girl and crying. And then when I talked to her, she started getting to where she was feeling a little bit better. And she looked up at me, and I looked up, down at her, and it was like I smiled at me as a little girl, and then she smiled back to me, and I gave myself a hug, in other words, visualizing that I was giving myself a hug as, as an adult to a child. And you know what? I mean, it really calmed me down. It made me feel a lot better, and I didn't have those anxieties anymore. I wasn't sad anymore.
Alan points up the real paradox of that situation with Mandy and her young daughter, is mm-hmm. that Mandy is soothing her daughter and allaying her fears, and she's doing exactly what her mother didn't do for her, and she was beating herself up every day just the way her mother had. And you could see it was she was trying to heal the problem in her own family by compensating for the experience she'd had as a girl herself. I thought that was an important insight that Alan introduced. Alan had about the situation. And when he pointed it out to Mandy, she said, yeah, that was the point of the psychotherapeutic session, I think.
This leads right into the very next part, prioritizing ourselves. And I was looking here earlier today, and what stood out to me was, what's more important, getting to my appointment on time or feeling comfortable for the next 20 minutes? And when I saw that, I thought, well, that looks like a catch-22. But at the same time, that's the way we've been thinking our whole lives. I've got to be in a rush. I got to get over there. I got to get on time. And most of the time we wind up having that big headache, and feeling rough when we get there. But we learned, through mind body healing and Alan's program here, what is more important? Like the next one, what's more important? What this random person thinks of me, or feeling content in this moment, basically loving myself and feeling happy with who I am. Have you guys ever had any situations like that you had to step up to the plate and it's helped you get out of that, what's more important phase, where you had to decide to take the higher road for yourself?
Well, the point is, you just don't have to make yourself feel bad in order to accomplish something. You don't have to have a bad time while you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm getting at, Bruce, is not us peers, we've learned better. But most people, they create that anxiety trying to make it, like, to work on time, or they create that anxiety of thinking, what do other people think about me? They create that anxiety about their midterms and so forth. You get what I'm saying now?
Yeah, just that having to have a bad time in order to feel like you're really doing it. To bring that ugly word up again, you have to ontologically validate it with suffering. And yet there's no real need for that. It's only an impediment. It only keeps you from engaging with what you're trying to actually do and accomplish.
I think there's been some research about willpower with that, where, the more you flog yourself, the more you say push yourself harder, actually, times the less you work. And sometimes just showing that compassion, prioritizing yourself, you're actually going to get the same amount of work done. You're just going to feel better. You're probably going to get more work done because you feel better.
Yeah, I can remember in grad school studying for my orals and just trying to read all the books and memorize everything by rote and know everything in Baugh's Critical History of English Literature and David Deitch's History of English Literature, and to make sure I did it all right. And I held it all in my mind like a machine. And yet, to really engage in the material, you have to be dispensed with all that. You have to actually enter into the dance or the dialogue with the material and really work with it. And it's like, I guess that's the difference between being a good student and actually being a teacher, when you're actually engaged with the material instead of learning it by rote and being a good little automaton. And I can see where learning things by rote like that is a very powerful psychological defense. It's a defensive ploy that you're playing. It's because you're going to say, well, if I learned everything perfectly and by rote, and I know all of this material and I could regurgitate it, then I'm okay. But you've missed the point. You haven't really engage the material and learn something from it for yourself.
So that prioritization is important. And it seems like a great example of self-compassion. I know that self-compassion is a big word. It's one that we hear a lot on the forums these days. But prioritizing yourself seems like a great example of that.
Okay. What about 3.11 here, attending to your internal state? I thought it was pretty awesome. He says, it is the same with your, I got to say this, guys. Often we neglect ourselves on a physiological level. Many times throughout the day, you'll have a rise in anxiety, and more than often than not, you power through it without even realizing it. Your internal state is like an infant. When you hear your baby crying, you attend to him. And when you attend to him, it calms him. It is the same with your internal state. A slight rise in internal anxiety is like your body letting you know.
Oh, I didn't know. I'm sorry.
I need to be attended to.
Sorry, I'm not sorry. I didn't know.
Yeah, I thought of anxiety, and that's I have a note here next to that paragraph. And I said that anxiety here functions as a distant early warning system before pain symptoms emerge. It's like it's like something tapping you on the shoulder and telling you you start. But what Alan keeps pointing out is you feel this viscerally. You can feel it if you're attuned to it. You can feel the anxiety in your stomach and your back, and that's where you have to attend to it. It's when you've got some kind of disconnect with those feelings, that you're getting into trouble, that they're taking over center stage.
Yeah, I feel like this section is one of the most important things that so many people miss when they're trying to heal from TMS. Is you really have to listen to what you're feeling. So there's been some great threads about focusing by Eugene Genlin. And what's focusing? It's just listening to your own felt sense. It's listening to how you feel. And I think that that's what a lot of us TMSers need to do. Am I right now? Am I tense? Well, okay, I'm going to do something about that. Right now, am I scared? Well, okay, I'm going to do something about that. So I love this section.
At the end of this section, Alan says, I can't overstate the importance of attending to your internal state, as we're emphasizing here. Throughout the day, when you pressure yourself or scare yourself, it doesn't just have an impact on your mind. It affects your body as well, like little fight or flight jabs. Checking in throughout the day recognizes increases in anxiety, and calming your system down can go a long way toward reducing your symptoms and improving self-care. So that checking in business is something that's important to learn. You have to learn to feel it in your body, feel your emotions in your body, which gets back to mindfulness.
You know, I think that's why when he tells him, allow yourself to get in touch with the rage, you know, with the feeling underneath. When I heard him say that, the first thing that came to my mind was Felt Sense, you know, by Eugene Gamblet. And, I mean, that was the first thing that hit my mind. I'm like, hey, you know, this sounds like Felt Sense to me. And I got what he was saying. And you know what? When he told him that, it made him, his anxiety diminish. And he said he felt better when he did that. So... Mm-hmm. I thought it was awesome, you know, when I heard that.
Okay. Walt, you got anything you want to say on that?
No, I've been listening, but I'm thinking that we're forgetting one of the big elements of TMS healing, and that's forgiving. Forgive our parents. You know, nobody's perfect. Take your lumps and go on from there.
Yeah.
So in terms of connecting that to these steps, I think that's interesting in terms of, you know, if you are prioritizing yourself, if you are going to provide comfort, if you are attending to your internal state, well, maybe one of the ways that you can do that is by letting go in some sense. Then you have to pay attention to that felt sense. And say, am I really able to forgive at this point? Maybe you can and maybe you can't, but I think the honesty is the most important thing to know, to attend to that internal state. Have I actually forgiven? Okay, I decided to, but am I still angry?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think if you can feel compassion for yourself, then it's a lot easier to forgive your superego figures, your parents, your environment, to have compassion for others. It all begins with feeling compassion for yourself. Mm-hmm. That lets you do these other things.
Yeah.
That starts with paying attention to your internal state and on and on and on and on.
Which pretty much takes us right into the very next segment, Take a Loving Stance. That's 3.12. Enjoy.
Yeah.
When you hear the term unconditional love and take a loving stance towards yourself, what do you think about this segment?
Well, excuse me. I think that what Alan's saying here is it's a heck of a lot easier to do all this other stuff if we have a generally very positive attitude towards ourselves. In other words, we take that loving stance. And if we take that loving stance towards ourselves, then it's going to be a lot easier to take it towards other people, including our parents and people who, you know, that may have given us a hard time in the past, because we are our number one resource. And if we don't love ourselves, if we don't love who we are and we aren't kind to ourselves, then who on earth are we waiting for?
Right.
Yeah, if we can't love ourselves, how can we love others? Yeah, that's awesome.
And I've got a note here on this the audio with Lane. Lane and I wrote this down, and I don't know if Alan said it or I just got this out of it, but Lane learns that self-esteem will make caring for herself easy. She doesn't have to look for external validation constantly. Her body doesn't want her to have to be so dependent on external validation. Doesn't have to, you know, doesn't want her to be, for example, at work, constantly waiting for somebody to say something positive so so that she can feel good about herself. It's far better if you just decide, yeah, I'm worth it. I'm doing the best that I can. That's good enough. Just make a choice. We made the choice not to feel good about ourselves because that seemed to be what we needed to do when we were kids. In order to make ourselves do all the things that a kid has to do, in order to make ourselves accept the abuse that was being handed out, that sort of thing, we decided, okay, there's something wrong with me. But that was a decision that we made from a very young, ignorant point of view. We are now adults, and we can look at ourselves honestly, and we can say, you know, I am really trying my best. I'm trying to be a good person. I don't always succeed, but generally speaking, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
You know, and then it makes it so much easier to get along with ourselves. We don't have to fight. You know, we don't have to fight with ourselves. We can we can notice that you're doing something that's not up to your own personal standards, and you can decide to change that. You don't need to feel bad about it. It makes life so much.
Well, I think the ray of hope that that Alan extends is in this section, Take a Loving Stance. He says, remember that self-love is a learnable skill.
Yes.
It may take patience, discipline, and repetition, but it is wholly attainable. You can actually learn that facility I was talking about. I think that's what I did, actually. To get rid of the inner bully was just saying, well, I'm going to like myself today. Heck with it. I'm not going to engage in this dialogue. But you have to actually actively activate that. It just doesn't come easy. Maybe you have to earn it. Maybe you have to work and earn it.
You guess.
If you're a good Puritan.
Yeah.
I've got another note here where Alan says, look in the mirror and tell yourself, I'm going to start taking care of you. And look yourself in the eye. I'm going to start taking care of you. And then my note says, love is all we need. It's all we needed when we were kids, and we didn't always get it in a form that we could accept. Now we can give it to ourselves just straight out.
Yeah, I've been looking at myself in the mirror, telling how much I love myself now for a long time. I was doing that years ago, and people would call me conceited. I just thought I had the best thing going in the world. You know, I really love myself with all my heart, but at the same time, I did know these power techniques like we have now. Forrest has a. Something to say. I can see it in his head over there.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I love these sections, and I think that what I like about them the most is what they talk up. I think often we say that healing is about digging something up, finding a mystery. And that's what we heal through insight. But here it almost feels like we're healing through mothering. You know, that this kind of self-soothing, we're kind to ourselves, we pay attention to ourselves, we're nice to ourselves. I thought it was just a nice metaphor to
reparenting.
Yeah, reparenting.
Mothering, there's lots of loving fathers in the world, and you know, we can give those things to ourselves.
Yeah.
Awesome. Joy, I haven't got to hear you say anything. Do you want to say anything about this, Joy?
Well, I've just been listening. I really am not very good at soothing myself. I don't really know how. Usually if I'm upset, I'll just read the Bible or pray, but I really don't know how to soothe myself.
Well, I think with you reading the Bible and praying, you're right on track.
That's wonderful.
Sure.
Well, what would you do with a child? Just extend the same love and courtesy to yourself.
Yes, that's what I did.
Because oftentimes our parents may have actually been quite loving, but the thing is they were under huge amounts of stress. They were immature, you know. They have four husbands to contend with, whatever it was.
That's wild.
We were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Well, now we're at the right place at the right time. And
there you go.
Joy, I'm really
glad. I think if we put ourselves in their shoes, we understand that where the problems came from.
That's awesome, Joy. That's awesome, Walt.
Well, they were practically kids themselves, really.
Our parents have had a lot of things that were worrying them, and they might have taken that out on us.
Yes.
So
my mother,
and forgiving. Understanding can lead to forgiveness.
That's a good one. I like that.
Joy, what were you saying? I want to hear more from you.
My mother used to, she wasn't very good at nurturing the children, but to soothe herself, she used to eat. And so she became morbidly obese. I don't do that because I don't want to be like that.
Common strategy.
You know, it's always interesting. I would have thought that. I mean, when I think about you, I actually think of someone who puts a lot of effort into soothing herself. I think about the affirmations that you put into the chat room. So it's like you're always saying these really nice thoughts.
Thank you.
Does that mean that is that affirmation not working for you, do you find? Is it more of an attempt?
If I'm upset, I usually focus on someone else. I'll call someone and, like, I have a friend who's in a nursing home, so I'll call to see how they're doing. I'll take the focus off myself. That's why very good, but yeah.
Well, that's a good thing at times. Absolutely. It's a good choice. That's what I do.
Eric Sherman recently, somehow I got this from him. I forget exactly what it was. But he said that he summarized Arlene Feinblatt's his mentor, he refers to her as the mother of all TMS therapists. Her approach to emotions is, or to TMS healing, is finding other ways to deal with one's emotions. And I mean, I think that there's a delicate balance in soothing oneself between embracing the painful emotion, allowing yourself to feel it, and then attempting to soothe oneself. Because if we think about what TMS is, TMS is, in a sense, it's because we've been pushing emotions under for too long and not feeling them. So part of TMS healing has to be allowing ourselves to feel those emotions. I like to think of mindfulness in this, and Stock Trader has been great at reminding us of this, that when an emotion comes in and you want to soothe yourself, Joy, I think the first thing is to allow yourself to feel it, to notice the emotion, and then to ask it, you know, is it ready to move on? You know, you don't have to let yourself be consumed by it. But I think what I find helpful is allowing myself to feel that emotion for a little while. Does that make any sense to you?
It does. In other words, become more aware.
Become more aware and more allowing. Like, if something bad happens, and we've all had really tough things in our life, I think the first step is, I think that it's absolutely valuable to reassure oneself, and it can absolutely be valuable to focus on other people. But at the same time, there is such a thing as healthy grieving. And I think that it kind of is, it's the responsibility of all of us to figure out what that balance is and how much healthy grieving we need. And then when it's time to get our focus elsewhere.
Not just healthy grieving, but also healthy anger. And, you know, all the emotions have a place.
There you go. Which to me, it comes down to mothering. I mean, I guess maybe that's my perspective on it, because I'm someone who, to some degree, or in a very big way, didn't get the mothering that he needed. As I've mentioned, my mother died when I was 9. And so as I've looked at kind of healing those wounds throughout my life, I've thought of, I've tried the insight thing, and I've tried the deep digging, and that hasn't actually helped me very much. But what has helped me is some of the stuff that's in this section of the program, of soothing myself, of giving me the skills that I think that a mother teaches a child, or a father, but mine didn't do a great job of that. just by kind of modeling those skills of teaching us how to prioritize ourselves, teaching us how to comfort ourselves, how to stand up to our inner bullies. I think parents can by listening to their children's emotions, by attending to their children's internal state, they can teach a lot of those skills. Can anyone else relate to that?
For sure. It's just good parenting. It's good parenting.
The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
And anybody who's got a kid rocks the cradle. So, you know.
Yeah. And to some degree, I mean, I think that there's this wonderful delay in the teleconferencing software, which delays things for about half a second, so it's very easy to bump into each other. Why don't you go enjoy?
I was just thinking that we need to learn from our parents how to raise a child, and if we didn't, then we have to start from scratch, and we're going to make mistakes. And we also need to learn from our parents how to look after our adult selves. And if we didn't get that, we're going to make mistakes. So it's a learning process, and hopefully we'll learn it in time to teach some of it to our kids. But I know I really didn't do that. My children are in their mid to late 40s now, and they missed a lot from me because I was just a dumb kid when I had them. I didn't know what to do. And I really wanted to be out having fun instead of staying home with a pack of kids. I really did. So, I mean, I relate to all this bad parenting that goes on. And I loved them, and I did the best I could. I really did. But I just didn't do a great job. So it's the way
that's
it is. Life.
Wonderful
we have
perspective. I love that. You've forgiven yourself so completely. You're aware, and I think that's awesome. That's wonderful.
I don't know that I've forgiven myself completely, but really, honestly, what's the point of doing anything else? I mean, it's years and years and years in the past now, and they've turned around, and of course, I was determined not to make the mistakes my parents did, and so, of course, I did the exact opposite to something of an extreme. And they turned around and they were determined not to make the mistakes that I made. And, you know, you should see the brats they turned out. So, you know, I didn't give you a break. We do the best we can. And we screw up. And, you know, eventually perhaps we get it right. And then there'll be a generation or two that actually have the skills. They know exactly what to do with a baby. They can love it and soothe it and grow it up with values. And, you know, everything's wonderful. But sooner or later, something happens. That, for example, if you end up in the hospital and the baby is abandoned during the first year, that kid is going to have troubles. And there's not necessarily anything you can do about it. So we just, you know, do the best we can. That's all we can do.
I agree. That's wonderful. I'm going to leave because I like to spend an hour with my eyes closed and meditate before I go to bed. If my mind is too active, I'll be awake all night.
Very sensible.
That's good, Walt. Thanks for telling us how you self-soothe before you go to bed. That's really great.
I thought the call-in was wonderful.
I got to get my 20 minutes.
Have reactivated your mind so much that you're going to be plagued with thoughts all night.
Right. Good night, everyone.
Thanks,
God bless you, Walt.
Bye.
Okay, buddy.
Food for thought.
Walt. Man, that was great. Mm. So how was it, everybody? Is I think this is awesome. I think everything we've talked about, it's just got me full of hope and joy. We got an enjoy on here. I'm full of hope and joy. And I think every one of you guys' words gave me inspiration. This is one of the best teachings I've heard so far. I love the whole program. I did miss some of the first parts, but this has been an awesome program of like Forrest said, showing us how we need to love ourselves too, other than just always, you know, digging into the past. We need to get that love to ourselves too.
Yeah.
Everybody agree?
Balancing act. It's like being in the circus.
It is a circus, and we have to make sure we keep that circus under control.
I'll try anyway.
Okay, there you go.
So Forrest, you're heading off pretty soon. It's the 6th of August. Are you excited?
I am terribly excited.
Did you get my message on the mod forum?
I did. I'm so sorry. I've been. I need to close up.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Thank you for getting in touch.
Yeah. Well, I've been worrying about you. So it's going to be interesting to see what you think. I'm really looking forward to hearing about it.
Oh, I am. I'm really looking forward to
coming. And you're gone until September sometime.
Yeah, planning to get back in early September, first week of September.
Oh, that's good. Well, I hope you have a great time. So we're just gonna get along without you, eh? While you're gone.
Yeah, you're gonna do. You are in good hands. Herbie and I spent an hour and a half going over the software and talking over everything. I thought he did an awesome job today. Round of applause for Herbie.
Yeah,
thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Yeah. Very enjoyable. Oh, that's good. Well, next Tuesday, then.
Well, and this is one of the things that we have to think about, guys, is what do we want to do in the coming weeks?
Right.
Yeah. What do you guys want to do, Herbie? I'll let you. So I've had two thoughts about this. Idea number one is maybe we could have. I don't know if we would get. I think people tend to not want to. People do seem to be shy. They tend to prefer to listen rather than to speak. But one thing that we could do is we could, if we wanted. We could just give people feedback. We could even turn off the recording, not record a couple sessions, and just give people feedback. Another thing, of course, is that y'all could start another book.
I'd say, now, go back over what you just said before you said start another book. Turn off what now?
Turn off the recording. So before we started doing... I don't know if you guys remember this. Bruce, you might have the best memory of this. Early on, we had a couple sessions where we just gave people feedback. Where
people just phoned in and talked about their TMS.
Yeah.
Almost like ongoing, I wouldn't say psychotherapy since we aren't licensed psychotherapists, but sort of round-robin discussions.
Peer support,
Different people's situation. Yeah, peer support for people who phoned in. That worked pretty well. We weren't getting too far ahead, I think, on our reading those days. And then the callers just came in and sort of hijacked the thread or whatever. And we just went with it, as I recall.
But they were pretty good, though, weren't they?
Yeah, that's what I mean. So why not?
Some of it was very useful. Yeah, I heard a bit of that. Yeah, some of it was useful. So, yeah, and I suppose people are reluctant to talk when they know that it's being recorded.
Yeah.
So it will be used against you.
Well, we had that thought. And then
there goes your Fifth Amendment right there.
Dr. Alexander, you know, said that he would love to know when we're talking about his book, and he would like to get in on the discussion sometimes. So,
that book is big.
Oh yeah, it's big. We'd have to basically take 4 or 5 chapters and talk about those as a lump sum, I would assume.
Well, just like doing Appendix 2 on the brain anatomy and how it relates to emotions and TMS symptoms. That is really concentrated. I think you've read that for us, haven't you? That Appendix 2?
Most of it, yep.
Yeah, that lit up my thinking cap when I was
Yeah, I loved his story on how back he read the John Sarno book. He came back, and it really changed his life. And at 38, he went back to playing Australian rules football. And it was pretty good. But anyway, you know, Dr. Alexander, he's up for anything later on. It doesn't matter. If you guys want to, let's let some people call in and not be recorded and help them out. I think y'all know I love helping people out, so I think we all do here. So whatever y'all want to do.
One thing that we could do. You can go, Bruce.
Well, there's also for another topic, there's Steve Ozanich's book too. That seems to strike
Steve's
a response that touches a responsive chord. I'd of course like to do Dr. Alexander's, but I know that Forrest likes Steve. And
it's
well,
true.
I don't know. I like it too.
I think everybody on the forum
a lot of people
are
interested
Steve.
In Steve's book too, out there in TMS forum land.
Bruce, are you talking about the great
form.
Pain? The great pain.
The great pain deception.
Yeah, that
like
I read that.
Yeah, he's got like the TMS encyclopedia there. I mean, I think he had every single thing known to man that you could have had. It's a sad, wow. You know, the symptom imperatives that he had that moved around his body. I think I'm having every one of them myself after learning what they are. Before I didn't even pay attention. Now I'm getting, you know.
How this rash on my back is exactly the location where the lower lumbar pain is with the TMS. Obvious, and as the TMS goes away, then the rash comes on. There's obviously a connection between the symptoms.
You know, Steve's got a lot of Zen in his book, a lot of good wisdom, and wow, the volumes you can speak on that one book of knowledge about TMS.
He really went the course, didn't he?
Yes, but at the same time, you know, Dr. Alexander, if it's okay with y'all guys, sometime in the future, you know. So what? What do y'all think? Steve next?
Either or. I'm not.
So Steve,
I'm just thinking
or,
about that. What is the best strategy? What do you think, Forrest? Which is the best approach to use? First one, then the other, which is the...
You know, the call-inners. What are you thinking, Joy?
I like it when it's not recorded. Then I don't have stage fright.
Okay. That's a good response.
Maybe what we could do is we could have a book ready. And then if someone calls in and they want feedback, we could say at the beginning of the call, hey, if anybody wants feedback, we won't turn the recording on, and we'll just give feedback, and we'll just chat. But then if nobody asks for feedback, then we can turn the recording on and we can do one of the books. I know personally, one of the reasons that I'm excited about this and tried to organized it is so that we could get great audio for people who like myself, really like audio and put it and integrate it with our content pages on the wiki. It does feel like there's an awful lot of interest in Steve's book. It definitely has achieved a certain level of canon, and it would be nice to get some content on that on the forum. I know there was a great deal of excitement about Alexander's book, and so
Steve's book was easy reading because he's not a doctor, so I didn't have to keep looking up words.
Yeah.
Oh, which one are you?
Yeah, I think that's as long as you get, as long as there's enough content on iTunes, you know, there's enough iPod content that people have quite a selection. We don't have to do it every week. It would be. I'm all for the idea of. Can we call it? Can we call it peer support if anyone would like peer support? Because that makes it clear that we're talented amateurs here.
Well, perhaps we could do peer support next week and then in 2 weeks do Steve.
Okay.
Yeah.
That could begin, because putting our feet in on two stones in the river at the same time, it makes you kind of flip back and forth, not knowing which, what to anticipate exactly. If Steve isn't going very well and we get a bunch of callers, oh, let's switch to the callers. I think it should be dedicated to the book in question, like it was with Alan Garden.
Well, if it's announced as specific to the book and that there's going to be a recording made, then we should stick with that. But there maybe should be times when we announce it that it's open for people to call in.
Okay, I think that all sounds great. I think that's a great plan.
Just some kind of a schedule here.
What do we do if no one calls in, though?
I tell you what, if they don't, I have got so much stuff to talk about, and I know between us, we will put out something that'll be great.
Okay, well, let's do that then.
I mean, seriously, I think Bruce could talk probably for about 3 days straight on some of the strategy he's got, you know. And
he'll teach us about ontology.
I was raining my. I don't need to look at my notes anymore.
Yeah, look at him. He's
really
turning into the brilliant
up.
Scientist. He's really great at what he does. And Enjoy. We all love to hear Enjoy. Joy's got that hard goat over there. And I've got probably 15 pages of notes, and I don't think I said maybe two or three sentences on them. So if some reason somebody didn't call
all
in,
over that thing.
What'd you
so
say, Bruce?
Much from studying for this, it's impossible to get it all out there in 1 hour.
Exactly.
Especially each one of those case studies. You could take apart each one of Lainey and John and Mandy. You could do a complete 1 hour on each one of those.
I've got like 6 pages written on those three, and I didn't even mention one thing myself about them. But I think it was
awesome.
You
learn a lot. I learned a lot from listening to this stuff.
I thought it was very helpful
for my own.
That's
view.
So wonderful. Yeah.
Okay, so next week we're going to, have it open for the floor for everybody that doesn't want, you know, to be on the radio. Great.
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, well.
Good. Okay. Well, I hope everybody has a little.
I'm not sunburned, Eric. This is the light up above me that shines down.
I was wondering why you're so red. I didn't know if you took a drink of beer or what.
I'm not red like this. It's the lamp up here.
Okay. Hey,
worrying about what
other people
think. Look out.
Bart, have a great trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're going to see the Great Wall?
Indeed, I am.
All right.
Hard to miss it. It's pretty great.
Tell you what, I'm gonna download the podcast. Well, we aren't going to record it, so I won't get a chance to.
Is that
one of the walls
you get to see from the moon?
It
from
is, yes.
Space?
It's awesome. The only man-made structure visible from space.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was supposedly built to keep the Huns out of the Han dynasty, and that's what propelled them into the Roman Empire, propelled them west. So Attila and the boys all headed for Rome, Illyria.
Actions have consequences. It's a great wall, though.
That's wonderful.
As long as they don't
okay,
come
guys, I hope we get to see some pictures. Will you be able to bring back a picture?
Yeah.
Of the wall?
Are you going to have a Facebook page or something? I mean, what's going on here?
I will take many pages, and I'm going to bring over a little laptop because I just cannot let my darling little nonprofit, you know, I cannot let it go for more than a couple days without coming to visit. So, I will be a regular visitor, and I will put up some photos. One thing I thought about doing on the forum is putting up an off-topic forum. And maybe I could do an off-topic thread, sharing some photos with everyone.
That's a good idea.
Awesome, man.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, then I'll do that. I think that'll be good.
That
maybe you guys.
Very homey.
Yeah, you can help me. We're gonna have to start out the off-topic forum. So help me out with that.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. Wonderful.
We'll notice it. We'll try to notice it and respond.
Awesome.
We're going to be the moderators, Jack Nicholson and Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, dear.
That would be off topic then.
Indeed.
Okay, guys. I guess we're going to wrap it up and call it a night.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Great job moderating.
Take care.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Thanks for your overseeing us.
Thank you,
good night.
Grace. God bless you.
Nice
work,
Eric.
Good night.
Exit. Exit stage right.